Good morning. Well, it's a real joy for me to be here this morning. And you look very beautiful to me. Can I see just who is here for the first time this morning? A few hands through here. Massive, gigantic welcome. It's really great to have you here. Rob was saying that today is all about the precepts here. And, you know, most days here actually are all about the precepts. Today we're talking about them more than usual, but it's the bread and butter of Zen life. Or the rice and tea, I should say, of Zen life. So I'm going to try and talk a little bit about the precepts today. And I wanted to start with a poem by W.S. Merwin called Place. On the last day of the world, I would want to plant a tree. For what? Not for the fruit. The tree that bears the fruit is not the one that was planted. I want the tree that stands in the earth for the first time, with the sun already going down, and the water touching its roots in the earth full of the dead, and the clouds passing, one by one, over its leaves. It's a vow to plant that tree on the last day of the world. It's a vow to plant a tree on any day of the world, and especially because in some sense every day is the last day of the world. The last day of this world, the last moment. So we situate ourselves in our practice in that vow. What does our vow look like? How do we experience and embody our vow? So, can I see a show of hands this morning? How many of you are here with a desire to completely liberate all beings from suffering throughout space and time? So you just embodied your vow. Did you see that? We're laughing and we should, but that's a big deal. That's a really big deal to put that in your body, to do that wholeheartedly, and to do that as a community. And the way that we express that community vow is through the precepts. These are the vows we take together. This is the way we orient our lives together. So this isn't the first time that I'm trying to say something to somebody about the precepts. The first time was about 6 years ago, and I had just started formally training in Zen, and I was watching a movie with my son called How to Train Your Dragon. And so in How to Train Your Dragon, the society, the best thing you can do ever is kill a dragon. You're Vikings, and you go out there, and you hunt dragons, and you kill them. That's who we are. And the main character, the hero, is kind of an outcast, and he wants to be accepted so badly, and he catches this really rare dragon, so he wants to kill it. And he takes the knife, and he walks over to where the dragon is under this net that he's caught it in. And in a moment of sort of heartbreaking compassion, he reaches under the net and cuts the ropes of the net instead of the dragon, and lets the dragon free. I got kind of, I got a good idea about this. I'm going to teach some Zen to my kid. I said, look, Finn, he's practicing not killing. And Finn burst out crying, and he said, but he killed the net. And I realized, my whole way of encountering this is wrong. It's not about actually killing the dragon or not. It's about how do we relate to things? What are our relationships with people, places, things? We talk about those relationships as the precepts. So what are the precepts? The precepts are taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. The Buddha is the one who awakened to reality. The Dharma is reality itself, the way things truly are. And the Sangha are the people who aspire to study and live according to the teachings of the reality of things. That's the first three of the precepts. The next three precepts are the pure precepts, which are vowing to do no harm, vowing to do good, and vowing to free all beings. Then come the 10 grave or major precepts, and they are don't kill, don't steal, don't engage in improper sexual conduct, do not lie, do not deal in intoxicants, or don't intoxicate yourself, don't criticize others, don't praise yourself and slander others, don't be stingy with the Dharma or your things, do not indulge in anger, and do not disparage the three treasures. The three treasures, again, are Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So the precepts end right where they begin. How do you not disparage the three treasures? By taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. The precepts are not a checklist that we move through and then all of a sudden, finally I'm a good person. The precepts are a constant cycle of engagement with our life. It's a hoop that we get to be inside of. A major part of our practice, of our Zen life, is the transmission and reception of the precepts. Our major ceremonies in Zen are Jukai, priest ordination, the Shuso ceremony, and transmission. And in those ceremonies, three of them are mostly about the transmission and reception of the precepts. Some people in this room are preparing for Jukai, is that right? See some hands and some nods. And in Jukai, you fully receive from your teacher these precepts. You vow to live according to them, to keep them in your life, to embody them. And your teacher vows to continue to transmit them to you, to be in relationship with these precepts with you. When you receive Jukai, you also get a lineage chart, and the chart is, it begins at the top with the historical Buddha, and then there's a little red line that goes to the first ancestor, Mahakashyapa. There's a little red line goes to the next ancestor, Ananda, and it goes all the way down through all the Indian ancestors, and then there's Bodhidharma, and then it goes all the way down through all the Chinese ancestors, and then there's Dogen, and it goes all the way down through the Japanese ancestors, and then it comes to Kadagiri Roshi, and then in our temple to Joen, and then to either Sosan or Byakuran. And then at the bottom, there's you. And then that little red line loops back around over the side of the page and comes back up to the top and connects back to Shakyamuni Buddha at the top. So it's another hoop. It's another place where it's the cycle that we're engaged in. The precepts are a hoop. The lineage is a hoop. Our whole lives are these hoops. In Dogen's Kyojukaiman, which is a commentary on the precepts, he says, "The great precepts of the Buddha are kept carefully by the Buddhas. Buddhas give them to Buddhas. Ancestors give them to ancestors. The transmission of the precepts is beyond the three existences of past, present, and future. Enlightenment ranges from time eternal and is even now. Shakyamuni Buddha transmitted the precepts to Mahakashyo, or Mahakashyapa, and he transmitted them to Ananda. Thus the precepts have been transmitted to me in the 84th generation." For Dogen, the precepts are an experience of intimacy with his spiritual ancestors. And that's a very different idea than a lot of us grew up with, of the Ten Commandments and moral codes, and if you don't do this, it's hell and brimstone, and people won't like you. Which was always my fear as a kid. I just wanted people to like me, and I didn't. Hell I didn't really know about, but man, I felt lonely. For Dogen, it's not about that. It's not about being a good person. It's about being that close with your teacher, and about being that close with your life. That both you and your teacher are looking right at it, and it is you. How are you doing? Who are you? What are you doing here? It also, for Dogen, points to this fundamental truth that you right now already are Buddha. He says, Buddhas transmit the precepts to Buddhas. So right now, you're good enough. Right now, you're already in the experience of enlightenment. Your body's doing it. Your mind is doing it right now. And we're all doing it together. We forget that all the time. That's our deep fear, right? We're scared we actually are Buddha. I'm scared I'm actually Buddha, because then I have to act like it, and then I've got to actually live up to that, is my thinking about it. So I kind of don't want to be Buddha, which I'm not sure if I've ever said out loud before. So I'm... There's a way that that's true. And at the same time, I desperately want to be Buddha. And both of those are off the mark, because we all already are. The last time that I was at Standing Rock, we were staying in the casino, or in the hotel, and I was hanging out in the casino one night. Because that's what you do at the hotel, you hang out in the casino. And it was this great scene, because it's a room full of strangers who are immediately having really intimate conversations just by virtue of kind of a shared purpose. And so somebody just sat down next to me and said, "Hey, who are you? What are you doing here?" I said, "Okay, well, my name is Genjo. I'm a Zen priest in training at this temple in St. Paul. I'm here because supporting the Standing Rock Camp is extremely important to me and to all beings." He said, "Okay, sure. Fine. What are you doing here, though?" And I said, "Oh, well, we brought a big shipment of supplies, of firewood and of food and of things for the camp." He said, you brought all that stuff yourself?" And I said, "No, we got donations from our sangha, from our community here, and from other communities that we're involved in." And then he got very excited, and he leaned in, and he said, "Oh, you're here as part of a hoop. It's not just you here. You brought all of them with you." I thought, oh, that's exactly the hoop of the precepts, of the vow, of trying to live the way we want to live. It's being in that. What is it? Dynamic. And that hoop of Sangha that he's talking about is also one of the precepts itself. So the precepts all together are one big hoop, and also an interlocking series of hoops, an interlocking chain that we get to be a part of. This is sort of what I think Katagiri Roshi was pointing to when he said that the precepts are a trellis for your life. So a trellis is a pretty rigid, but it can't be too rigid, structure that a vine will grow up and flower on, or fruit on, depending on what you want out of the vine, I guess. I think that one of the things Katagiri Roshi is thinking about there is wisteria vines, which are really beautiful. They look like big clusters of grapes, but they're flowers, vines. And the Japanese wisteria is particularly beautiful wisteria. Dogen talks about wisteria in his essay Kato as a image of that lineage again. So our lineage is one long vine of wisteria wrapping around, in this case, the precepts. This is also a really beautiful and really intimate idea of what it means to practice Zen, which can feel very austere, very alien, very sanitized. But it's not. You know, the vine grows in the dirt. The lotus comes out of the mud. The trellis, we have trellises on our house at home. They're always breaking. You always have to put them back together. The vine falls off the thing. It's lost in the weed. You got to put it back on the trellis. It falls immediately off again. You got to put it back on the trellis. You're raking around the vine, and you make a mistake, and you rip all the bark off the vines, and now you have to cut the vine down to the root, and you feel awful. I'm saying you, I mean me. That happens. All of that is exactly the messiness that this practice involves and being willing to do. Sometimes, and I've had this perception that Zen is about perfection, that Zen is about doing everything exactly right. And it's really not. Zen practice is about making mistake after mistake after mistake and getting back up and getting back up and getting back up. Or maybe I should say, and getting back upright and getting back upright. We're going to fall over. Nothing can protect you from that. But in Sangha, we can get back up together. And with the precepts as a trellis, we can know what direction we should be getting back up in. In Zen, we also call the precepts Zen Kai, which means Zen precepts. And according to Okamura Roshi, this illustrates that doing zazen and our precepts are one and the same, that there's no distance between zazen and the precepts. Also, this is not Okamura Roshi now, our zazen and our social activity, our social action, are also one. Also, our doing the laundry and mowing the lawn are one with our zazen and our precepts and our direct action. This total dynamic we call living in vow. And again, has very little to do with being perfect. Or actually even with the people like you, to go back to what I'm concerned about most of the time. Has very little to do with that. But it has to do with, are you right here? Where is your mind? And the precepts let us know where the boundaries of that is. If my mind is way over here and I'm thinking about killing somebody, well, I'm probably pretty far off of the mark. But if my mind is right here on the page, on the cushion, on the microphone, then I'm probably pretty close to the mark. Evaluating that's a problem. How close to the mark am I? That thinking is also pretty far from the mark. But it's useful to have something that lets you know you're a little out of bounds here. Come back to us. Come back to us. In the final fascicle in the Shobogenzo, Dogen says, he's talking about the 109 Dharma illumination gates, I think. Do you know how many?
I think it's 108.
I thought so too, but for some, anyway. It's a large number of Dharma illumination gates. And pretty close to the top of the list is, he says, mindfulness of precepts is Dharma illumination. For with it, we fulfill all our vows. So he doesn't say accomplishing the precepts or doing the precepts or holding really tight and steady to the precepts is what accomplishes our vows. He says, being mindful of the precepts, bringing that as an awareness into our life, as an energy that we're riding, that in itself accomplishes all our vows. And to sort of drive that point home, there's a verse from Hakuin Zenji, who's a very different lineage from ours, but a really important and really beautiful Japanese Zen teacher. He says, precept-breaking monks do not fall into hell. Those who practice them in perfect purity do not enter nirvana. Has nothing to do with how well you've done it, with what you did, with that checklist. It has to do with how are you bringing that into your mind right now. Or not even that. Whatever's in your mind, how are you dealing with that? You don't need to even bring anything else in. When I was, I think, 7, my dad had a friend and kind of mentor who was a sculptor that lived near us named Joe. And Joe was over one day, and I was going crazy. I was, like, running around, and I was a bit of a wild kid. And when I meet people who knew me when I was that age, I generally blush and have to say I'm sorry a few times because I've probably broken something of theirs. And my dad was explaining to Joe some parenting strategy of dad's that had gone completely, completely wrong, just blown up in his face. Like, it was, you know, we've all had parenting strategies. The parents in the room, you know what that's like when you think, I got this, and boom. And Joe, in the story, listens very attentively and closely to my father. And at the end of the story, he said, just remember, no matter what you do, it's wrong. And Dad said, I felt like someone had taken a 10,000-pound weight off my chest. Because he was trying so hard to be right. Because I'll talk about me now. I spend so much time of my life trying to be right and good and perfect. And for people to notice that. I'm uncomfortable that my wife laughed the loudest at that joke, actually. But Joe says to my dad in that moment, you don't have to do that. You can never be perfect. You can never be completely right. No matter what you do, compared with the infinite variety of human experience, it's never the right thing to do. At best, it works out okay for a while. It works out okay for a while is what we call skillful means. Right now, this is helpful. The second it becomes unhelpful, I'm going to ditch it. That's a really great way to live your life. Part of that is recognizing that, really, you don't do the precepts. And you don't take the precepts, as we say sometimes that we take Jukai. Instead, you allow the precepts to act through you. You allow whatever that is. And if I at all am giving you the impression that I know what the precepts are, let me be very clear, I don't. But there's something there. And when we let that something work on us and work through us, like a really good actor who all of a sudden lets you see something about truth, even though it's a play, when we let that work through us, that's a really beautiful way to live our life. And the amount that we can let go at that point is massive. The work that we're constantly putting into this living thing, the striving, we can let go of a lot of that at that point. And that's really huge. I wanted to finish, and then a couple minutes for questions, with a koan from the True Dharma Eye, which is Dogen's collection of 300 koans. And this involves one of my favorite early Zen teachers, Changsha, whose 100-foot pole we like to talk about a lot. But this is not about the 100-foot pole. It's called Changsha's Liturgy. A monk asked Changsha, what is a chant? Changsha pointed to the left of his meditation seat, which is just like here. There's nobody there in this story. Points to the left of his meditation seat and says, this monk is reciting the chant. The same monk asked him again, is there anybody else who can recite it? Changsha pointed to the right of his meditation seat, empty, and said, that monk is reciting it too. The monk asked, so this is a pretty good monk at this point, right? He's not letting Changsha off the hook. The monk asked, why can't I hear this chant? Changsha said, haven't you heard that real chanting makes no sound? And in real listening, there is no hearing? The monk asked further, doesn't sound enter into the nature of the Dharma realms? Means, but there's sound, right? Changsha says, leaving form to observe form is not a correct view. Leaving sound to seek listening is impaired listening. Trying to find someplace else to view your life from is just going to end in heartbreak. Trying to find some place outside yourself that you can evaluate your activity and say, oh, I'm a good person, I didn't kill anybody today, is just going to make you more miserable and probably puts those around you at risk. Trying to be outside form, this body, to learn about this body, is really deep delusion. But being in this body, being in the precepts, and learning about the precepts, engaging that learning process, all those hoops in your life, that's pretty deep wisdom. The verse that ends this koan is, though it fills the eyes, he doesn't see form. Though it fills the ears, she doesn't hear sound. Manjushri is always covering his eyes. Avalokiteshvara is always covering her ears. So don't worry about what you think you're supposed to do. Cover your ears, cover your eyes, see what's going on in your life. That's the precepts. At least I think so. We have time for a couple questions or comments. So in the hoop, there's no beginning point and there's no end point, and there's no little chunk of the hoop that you can say, oh, look, this is a different part of the whole, and that's me. Speaking of Tenshin Roshi, he has a great image of a circle that has a little lump on the side of it. And he says, we want that to be reality, that there's all of reality, and then there's us over here, like this special little thing. He says want, but I think we're terrified of that too. So we want and we're scared of that at the same time. So that's not what it is. What it is the hoop is we're completely integrated into this dynamic process. And there's lots of ways for us to look at what dynamic process means. So it can be, we can talk about the dynamic process of the precepts. It can be, we can talk about the dynamic process of the lineage. We can talk about the dynamic process of giving and receiving and gift, of community and communities near that community, adjacent community, I guess. But all of those are a way of really realizing my life is completely integrated with the lives of everybody in this room. Even though I haven't met most of them, everybody on this block, even though I haven't met almost any of them, everybody in this city and state and world and universe. So the hoop shows us that. And on that's the outside of the hoop. The inside of the hoop is completely empty. So our teaching of emptiness is really shown right there. What's important is, what's important is the entire thing. Well, let's all be like Manjushri and Avalokiteshvara in the verse then, and just cover our eyes and cover our ears and know that that also is completely, fully embodying the practice of our ancestors.
Closing chant is on the front of your room. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless.